2 weeks ago, Pope Francis published an update to the catechism, this, you know, catechism, big green monster of a book, with everything in it, that we believe. Has anyone followed this story? I don't know. I follow all the Catholic news, whatever. So, now, of course, the Pope doesn't make a change like this just unilaterally. It's done, you know, together with bishops, other bishops, and theologians and such. The issue under discussion is capital punishment, the death penalty, execution. So here's the old paragraph, and then I'll read the new section, okay? For those following along at home, it's number 2267. And it reads this: assuming that the guilty party's identity and responsibility have been fully determined, the traditional teaching of the Church does not exclude recourse to the death penalty, if this is the only possible way of effectively defending human lives against the unjust aggressor. If, however, non-lethal means are sufficient to defend and protect people's safety from the aggressor, authority will limit itself to such means, as these are more in keeping with the concrete conditions of the common good, and more in conformity with the dignity of the human person. Today, in fact, as a consequence of the possibilities which the state has for effectively preventing crime by rendering one who has committed an offense incapable of doing harm, without definitively taking away from him the possibility of redeeming himself, the cases in which the execution of the offender is an absolute necessity are very rare, if not practically non-existent. Now, so that's when Pope John Paul II was Pope, that was the way it was written, leaving the possibility that a government could legitimately use the death penalty. But Pope Francis, this is the new section, and this is how it reads here. The Church teaches, in the light of the gospel, that the death penalty is inadmissible because it is an attack on the inviolability and dignity of the person, and she works with determination for its abolition worldwide. So it's a little bit stronger, not a huge... It's that gets inserted in that, in the end of the first paragraph. I read three paragraphs, but it's a little bit stronger, saying that as far as the Christians are concerned, we shouldn't make recourse to this, and we should work instead with determination for the abolition of the death penalty. So there are multiple reasons why this change was made, including, as this says, the increasing effectiveness of detention systems, and secondly, leaving open the possibility of conversion in the person who would otherwise be killed, because we're all in favor of reconciliation, of confession, of growth and change in a good direction. So when Pope John Paul II discussed this issue in here and included it in the catechism here, it was a development, it itself was a development in how we think about execution, because before then, it was conceived by the Church and by many thinkers as a legitimate punishment for many criminals, and is something that serves the greater good. And so let's talk a little bit moral theology here. It's a bit, these sorts of issues require a lot of thinking and a lot of prayer. The idea of a government killing a person for punishment and for the greater good, it's been used for centuries, for millennia. It's been used by governments, legitimately. It's even been used by church government when it had, you know, actual governmental authority in places. We have to think of the reasoning for using it like cancer in a body. If someone has cancer, the whole cancer, the whole tumor has to be cut out. No one says, you know what, if you could just take care of half of it, I'll be fine. It doesn't work like that. It has to be dealt with completely. So execution is meant to remove a person completely from the body of society. But the same reasoning is also used when people take this sort of justice into their own hands, and not by, you know, just the government, by the state. So like the mafia, I mean, think the Godfather movies, lynch mobs, you know, people who pursue vigilante justice all conceive of themselves as executing people for punishment and for the greater good, or at least for their own good, for the good of their group. Like, so they believe that they are justifiably punishing somebody who has done wrong. Now, to protect against this, people generally say that, you know, thinkers about this and philosophers will generally say that governments legitimately use it, but smaller groups, you know, a dozen of us can't go out and just do it ourselves legitimately. Of course, this isn't just a punishment for people who have been convicted of crimes. It's also been used for people we might think of as heroes. So think Nathan Hale. I regret that I have but one life to give for my country, right? Or Patrick Henry, give me liberty or give me death. John Brown's execution likely extended the American Civil War, according to historians. And then, of course, there's Sir Thomas More. Anyone watched a movie with us a few weeks ago about Sir Thomas More, Man for All Seasons? Thomas More, defying his conviction of treason, and treason is punishable by death, especially during a time of war, at least historically it has been, he defied his conviction of treason when he said, "I die the king's faithful servant." I'm holding to that. But he says, "I die the king's faithful servant, but God's first." So whether it's standing for good causes or not, or because of, or maybe because of criminal convictions, people have been executed. People have received the death penalty. But when John Paul II discussed this issue, he reframed it in more than just terms of punishment or the common good. Those two are important to take into consideration, but he also talked about the death penalty in terms of self-defense. And that third one is an important inclusion, addition, in a way. Is this person a danger to others? Is there no other way that we could protect the public from this person except by his or her execution? So both Pope John Paul II and Francis argue that with modern prisons, we really don't need to resort to execution. In addition to that, though, the Church is concerned and is always concerned about the criminal's conversion. When a person is executed, the possibility for change and conversion is cut short. We can't just say, well, kill them all and let God decide. We can't do that. I've never been a full-time prison chaplain, but I've heard many, many confessions in a number of prisons. And the things that go on inside of a human heart are amazing. People, with the grace of God, can change. And we have to allow that possibility. There are people who do lead a different life after many years in the system, you know. There are even former gang members who, after getting out of prison, now work to get people out of gangs and to show them a better way. When we don't keep open the possibility for change, and we advocate for the death penalty or make use of it too frequently, we may deprive them and many others of a fuller life and of being prepared when they ultimately leave this life, having gone through that process of conversion that we all desire and that God desires. This is all part of our comprehensive ethic of respecting life, along with other issues such as euthanasia, abortion, you know. So for this reason, I think Pope Francis strengthened the wording of this passage of the Catechism. I don't think it's a huge change from what it said before, but there is a change there. It's stronger. Some will argue that there still may be extreme circumstances that call for execution, and we can have that discussion. It's not like Pope Francis putting the kibosh on it, but we as Christians have to find every way possible to preserve life rather than to take it, because only God ought to give and take life. So whenever we take any sort of stand on a moral issue, including this or war or the morality of business practices or sexual ethics or whatever, we often find ourselves in conflict with others. And I think that we can take comfort in this account of Elijah today in that first reading from the Old Testament, because Elijah is tired. He's tired from fighting the good fight. He's being chased and chased and chased by this queen who wants him dead. And Elijah's ready to give up just to let them catch up with him and let them kill him. He's ready to throw in the towel. But God doesn't let him. God needs him to continue his vocation as a prophet, to stand up for God's ways. So God sends his angel to protect him while he sleeps and to feed him when he wakes up with this food that the angel brings him. The danger for Elijah is to fall into despair, to believe that, as good as his intentions may be, that there's no hope in fighting, that there's no reason to keep going. Despair is to give in to the belief that good will always lose and evil will always win. It's not something we want to believe, but it's something that we might in moments of depression or despair. Despair is surrender to the powers of evil, surrender to the dark side, surrender to hell. So let's not despair. When we become depressed, like Elijah, we must allow ourselves to be close to God, to pray, to complain if we want to, but to stay near the sacraments and to accept the help and the comfort and the food that comes from God.